On Tech News Today, Apple and Microsoft reported their earnings yesterday. Who's up and who's down? Also, is Microsoft really planning to merge all versions of Windows into one? Not going to happen. Plus, we look at how drones are making the world a better place, sort of. All that and more coming up right now on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, July 23rd, 2014. This episode is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Apple and Android devices are worth at gazelle.com. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Welcome to the show. I'm Mike Elgin. And with me, of course, is Jason Howell III.
You're the first that I know of.
Okay. All right. Well, eventually.
For the record.
Jason Howell I.
Mike's trying to get clever on this.
That's right. Sorry about that. And that is the voice of Elise Hugh of NPR fame. Welcome, Elise Hugh.
Thanks, Mike and Jason. It's great to be here.
So today's a special day because today is the third year anniversary of the Brick House, and we're having a big party here. We've already got a studio audience in the house, and my wife is actually sitting right next to me for the show here. That's the back of her head there. And she's here for the Brick House party. Again, 3 years. It seems like it was only yesterday that Leo and Lisa put this thing together. It's a fantastic place, and we're going to have pizza, I heard. Something like that. So it's really exciting here. And you can watch a lot of the activity and mayhem if you just search Google for Twit drop cams, right? Twit drop cams, and you'll see all the Big Brother spy cams that we have in the studio here. So you can check it out.
Yeah, it's twit.tv/dropcams if you want to go right there.
Okay, great. And it's a lot of fun. And if you're anywhere in the area, come on down because we're going to have fun today. Well, let's jump into the news. Apple announced third quarter earnings yesterday, reporting solid iPhone sales and weak demand for the iPad. Apple sold 35.2 million iPhones in the quarter, which is 12.7% over the same quarter of last year. And they sold 13.2 million iPads, which is about 1.4 million fewer than the same period last year. Mac sales also made a surprisingly strong showing. The company reported overall revenues of $37.4 billion for the quarter, and $7.7 billion of that was profit. Tim Cook actually has a swimming pool in his office where they dump all the profit cash, and he swims and backstrokes through the cash every morning, first thing in the day. Joining us is Chris O'Brien, who writes about technology for the Los Angeles Times, and he wrote about Apple's earnings reports yesterday. Welcome, Chris O'Brien.
Good to be here.
Now, Apple says they're not worried about declining iPad sales. Declining sales of any product category, especially a major one like iPads, is not a normal Apple thing, but should Apple be worried about these declining sales?
Well, it's hard to tell. I mean, you're right. And there was a lot of spin yesterday in the conference call about how the numbers may have fell short of Wall Street's expectations, but they hit what Apple expected, and that they're happy that people like their iPads and use them a lot. And this is sort of standard stuff. We've heard about them for the last couple of years. I think it is surprising if you go back, a couple years, the rate at which the iPad grew for the first couple of years just seemed to constantly blow past all expectations. And now suddenly you have it kind of in a mild decline here. And that's true, I think, in general for the tablet market, which is hitting a plateau of sorts. So it's not the gigantic second blockbuster product that it may have looked like it was going to be a couple of years ago. It's still a very big business, and people do still really like them. But Apple does have some plans to try to, I guess, reverse that decline and get it going again.
Chris, what are we seeing among users? Are American users, and this is obviously separate than the developing world, but are American users essentially saying, you know what, I don't need a tablet in addition to my mobile device? And are we heading to sort of a sweet spot, that phablet sweet spot, if you will, that's a little bit bigger than a mobile device and smaller, or a traditional smartphone and smaller than an iPad? What are consumers saying as we see this slight decline in sales?
Well, I hope that phablet doesn't catch on, just because I don't want to have to say phablet ever again. there's an interesting statistic, and Tim Cook's talked about this a couple calls now, which is, yes, iPad sales are slowing or declining depending on the quarter, but that most of the iPads being sold are being sold to people buying their first iPad. And so it seems like, they haven't come right out and said this, but it seems like the implication is the overall universe of people who own these things is still growing. In part, the issue seems to be that once you get one, you don't necessarily feel compelled to go out and buy a new one every 2 years. I still have my iPad 2, which works great. I don't feel, you know, motivated to go spend $500 or $600 on an iPad Air, although I'm sure it's much better than my iPad 2. So I think that's the silver lining for Apple that they're trying to look at is people like them, people use them a lot, and the number of people who actually own them out in the U.S. and in the world is still growing.
Yeah, that was one of their points that, Tim Cook specifically made, which is that iPad sales are growing in the developing world, which included China in that, and also the Middle East region and India. And he also said that even in the United States, the opportunity is huge because only 20% of businesses have embraced iPad. So he thinks that probably, referring to the IBM relationship, they're going to be able to sell a lot more iPads into businesses, which is really kind of fascinating. And again, our expectations are completely out of whack for the iPad. This is a new category that Apple essentially invented in 2010. I don't think there's any real relationship between the new touch iPads and the sort of tablets that Microsoft was selling throughout the last 15 years or so.
Yeah,
They essentially invented this category, but when they first came out with the iPad, they owned the market for like a year or two without any serious competition. Everybody thought, well, they're just going to own this forever. But of course, nothing lasts forever.
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, that those expectations were set by the fact that it came out of the gate so fast. And it just seemed like there was a stretch the first couple of years where it, you know, I'd get every analyst estimate I'd get for sales, they would blow way past it. And suddenly you began to think, wow, in a couple of years, maybe people won't be buying PCs or laptops anymore, and they're going to replace everything with iPads or tablets. And I think what we found is, you know, and business being a good example, that there's some limitations there in terms of what people see it for in terms of their usage. And so, again, that'll be interesting to see if IBM can help them sort of shift that within the corporate world and get either find new uses for it or convince people that it can be a replacement device for their network of laptops.
Chris, anything else stand out to you from yesterday's earnings and call?
You know, overall, I mean, the iPad thing aside, it was an unusually kind of dull, drama-free call by Apple standards. You know, often investors kind of freak out one way or the other, but it really did feel like people are overall feeling good about where Apple is today versus even a year ago when there was a lot of anxiety around the company's future. And they're really, you know, looking ahead to the fall, you know, for new product launches, the rumored bigger iPhone, the iWatch. So, you know, we had a lot of rumors last summer about what Apple was going to do in the fall, and most of them turned out not to be true. So we'll see if Apple really delivers on this stuff and how it's received.
I thought one of the most interesting facts from the announcement was that Mac revenue was up 22% from the year ago period, and also Apple's reporting double digit growth for the Mac in some mature markets, including the United States and Canada. Now, this is in the context of an overall PC market that's been in decline for quite a while, is kind of stabilizing or leveling off. But here, Apple is just reporting these huge gains. Now, boosts in revenue, that 22% is a revenue figure. Now, I don't know how much of that is because of the Mac Pro maybe is super profitable or something. I don't know what this is, but that's pretty impressive in the context of the larger market.
Yeah, I mean, that is surprising, but I think that then speaks to the power of the ecosystem that they have. You know, if you're a Mac user and you have a couple of these things, it increasingly makes sense to just, you know, go get that extra one, you know, replace your laptop with a PC, or excuse me, your laptop with a Mac. And, you know, the other thing is worth noting, I mean, they you know, in terms of the cost of these things, they're, you know, a Mac is still going to be a bit pricier, but, you know, they've made a shift in the past year to make a lot of their software and apps free. You know, the operating system, you know, is free for upgrades. So I think they've helped they probably nudge some people over with that. You know, when you talk about the total cost of owning one of these devices, they've narrowed the gap there a bit, not completely, but they've made the argument that it's a little bit less expensive than it used to seem.
Chris O'Brien writes for the Los Angeles Times, and you can find him at latimes.com and on Twitter at O'Brien. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, just a sec. We're going to hear about Microsoft's earnings, but first I want to tell you about Gazelle. Chris O'Brien was talking about his old iPad. He should sell that to Gazelle and get the upgrade. It has a, that's just my opinion, it has the Retina display, and it's super easy to do. Just go to gazelle.com. That's G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Find the item you'd like to sell to Gazelle, and then indicate its condition. Is it good, fair, whatever? And then they will give you a price. You'll be surprised by how much they're willing to pay for your old device that you've thought was useless and has just been sitting around gathering dust and declining in value. Right now, we're looking at the screen. If you look in the video version, this is an iPhone 5S, 64 gigabyte, $345 is what they'll pay for the unlocked version and $300 for the AT&T version. Wow, that is a lot of money. That'll go a long way toward your next iPhone, especially if you move to Android. You can cover the cost of the entire phone and have some cash left over. You got to check out Gazelle. Just find those old items, go rummage through the box or drawer, wherever those things are, and just plug it in. Check it out. It takes just a few seconds to find out how much your devices are worth. You get paid fast by check, PayPal, or if you use the Amazon gift card option, you'll get an extra 5%, which is great. We all use Amazon, and that is really a good way to go. A payment is fast, and you get it within a few days of the item being received. And, of course, it's risk-free. They'll even wipe the data on your device to make sure that none of your personal information gets into the wrong hands later. Gazelle has paid more than $100 million to more than 700,000 customers, and it's super, super easy. What's your Apple or Android device worth? Take a minute and go to gazelle.com to find out. And do it now because your device may lose value the longer you wait. Elise Hugh, Microsoft also had their earnings report yesterday. How did they do?
Well, and it follows the big layoffs, the historically large layoffs of last week. And earnings were mixed, Mike. The company's revenue reached $23.4 billion. That's a year-over-year increase of almost 18%. But Microsoft did come in below profit estimates, and we know Satya Nadella, who took over as CEO in February, has big plans for the company, but that's yet to be seen in this particular quarterly earnings report. To talk more about this, we are joined by Alex Wilhelm, writer at TechCrunch. Alex, kind of tell us what the big takeaways are that we should be paying attention to.
Well, I think the cloud revenue was very important for the quarter. They announced that their cloud revenue on the corporate side reached a run rate of $4.4 billion, which was up, I think, more than 100% year over year. So a lot of the bets they've made there over the last couple of years are now paying off. And I think, secondly, people were surprised on the profit side because the assets they bought from Nokia just lost more money than people expected. I think there was an 8% per share loss attached to the hardware assets they bought from Nokia. So if they hadn't purchased those, they would have actually made their profit guidance. So it's important to keep that depression in mind.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there. There's the Nokia acquisition. There's the new CEO. There's all kinds of turmoil, and it's kind of difficult to sort through all the information and figure out exactly what's going on, exactly how much of this is changing. Obviously for the future, the one of the big things that investors were looking at was what Satya Nadella has to say about the future of Microsoft. Of course, the past that they're reporting on here, that's Ballmer's Microsoft. What was the reaction, do you think, in the investor community, also the tech community, to this earnings report? Is there optimism about Microsoft?
Actually, oddly, yes. I think the stock was down right after they reported earnings because of that profit miss. But this morning, the stock is up. It was up after hours. They got a number of analyst upgrades today. People are relatively bullish. I think that once the layoffs come into effect and reduce the overall burn on the phone division side and lowers that cost and therefore reduces the unprofitability of it, I think we'll see Microsoft kind of more in line with street estimates on profit. And then given the revenue growth was better than expected, people are relatively happy about that. I mean, there are negatives here. Consumer PC demand was bad. Service revenue was low. Windows Phone's not growing quickly enough. But a lot of the other bones of the business appear strong. You know, Office is doing a good transition to subscription. I think that, you know, Windows OEM was up 11% or something like that. It was, you know, there's a lot of good to the quarter and some weak spots, but overall people seem positive.
So taken together, this recent earnings report and the layoffs of last week, what can we see of Nadella's leadership? Obviously, Wall Street really likes him a lot because he was willing to make cuts. But what can we read now that there have been these significant reports and moves?
I think Nadella is not afraid to shake things up and pursue his own vision. I mean, between the layoffs, Office for iPad, and a number of other kind of product decisions, he's kind of laid a separate course out for the company that Ballmer had not put in place. And you're right, we are seeing a lot of stuff that Ballmer started and Satya is kind of finishing or wrapped up and putting into market. But I feel like he's definitely trying to lay his stamp on the company quickly while he has momentum and people are letting him have that kind of flexibility. Everything that I hear from Redmond itself is that there's a positive response to his decisions. And when it comes to layoffs specifically, given how few of those were kind of focused in the Seattle area, there's not a lot of tension up there. So I think he has kind of, you know, a lot more runway to do what he wants. And especially I'd like to say that when you talk to the company, it feels different than it did a year ago. So at least culturally, it seems to be that he's having an impact now. What that'll do for product of the next 2 to 4 years is your call. But at least he's having a shakeup internally.
Alex Wilhelm writes at TechCrunch.com, and he tweets under the coveted handle of Alex. Thank you so much for joining us on Tech News Today.
Of course.
Well, news outlets are reporting that Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella announced that the company plans to merge the currently separate version of Windows into a single unified version that will run on all devices of all screen sizes. But that's not really what's happening, according to Paul Thurrott. Paul publishes the supersite for Windows and co-hosts Twit's Windows Weekly Show, which airs, by the way, immediately after this show today. And he's joining us now to clarify what Nadella actually announced yesterday. Welcome, Paul Thurrott.
Thank you. That's my new job, clarifying what Microsoft says.
That's right. It's like the White House press correspondent.
Yeah.
It's not an enviable job. Now
I feel like a Baghdad Bob.
Exactly. Well, you do it well. Nadella announced, quote, a single converged operating system for screens of all sizes, unquote. That sounds pretty clear. He didn't announce one version of Windows?
No. In fact, the funny thing is, if you really go back in time just a little bit, in fact, back to Ballmer's days, they've been talking about this kind of thing for a long time, have been converging Windows toward a single core. But, you know, that sentence immediately triggered a bunch of blog posts from folks and of course, questions from analysts and press about what is this? This sounds like something new. You're going to get rid of Windows RT, Windows 8. You're going to get rid of Windows Phone, Windows Embedded, Windows for the Internet of Things, perhaps, and just have this one thing, Windows. And no. So, I mean, this is actually no different than what they've already been doing. It's not a strategy change. It's not even an enhancement of any kind. And when queried about this in the Q&A at the end of the call, the post-earnings conference call, he provided a little bit of nuance. I'll just read a little bit of what he said. He said, he was referencing the work they've already been doing. Our SKU strategy will remain by segment. We will have multiple SKUs, meaning product versions, for enterprises. We will have multiple SKUs for OEMs, meaning for PC makers. We will have multiple SKUs for end users. In other words, nothing's changed. There will be a Windows 8 Core or something like, or sorry, Windows 9 Core, a Windows 9 Pro, a Windows 9, you know, Enterprise. I mean, it's business as usual.
So is this a PR or marketing mistake, or was it slightly on purpose to intentionally make us believe that there is some sort of streamlining going on?
Yeah, I think it's the point where marketing meets reality. Obviously, from a marketing standpoint, you want to, hey, come in as Nadella's a new CEO and you're shaking things up, and he is shaking things up. He's also continuing a bunch of things that were already happening. And I think from the outside world's perspective, Windows is on the decline. We're moving to mobile devices and so forth. And this sounds like something strategic. We're going to rein it in. We're going to have one version of Windows that runs on everything. And it's not quite that simple, but it's really also not any different from what they were already doing. This modern platform where you can write universal apps that run on phone, that run on tablets, and that run on the PC, and then someday on Xbox as well.
Now, of course, there needs to be more than one version of Windows, and you've supported that idea, and you don't support the idea. If, in fact, this news was true, you wouldn't support that from what you wrote. But why not? I mean, Apple seems to get away with it, as far as I can tell, with a single version of their desktop. So shouldn't Microsoft at least do part of what Nadella appears to be claiming here? Shouldn't they just have one consumer version of Windows and one enterprise, for example?
Yes, they should. But, you know, that's just my opinion. I mean, to be honest, in many ways, what Microsoft does is a little bit like what Apple does on a broader scale. You know, they have the same core OS that they use across, in Microsoft's case, servers, PC desktops, tablets, phones, and even the entertainment console, the Xbox. Apple has, of course, the same Core OS that they use across Mac. Previously, on, well, they have server version, right? Server and client, and then also on iOS, which is tablet and phone. And so that approach is similar. Apple has always had a much similar product lineup. They have one version of Mac OS. In fact, now server is just something you add on to Mac OS, which is nice. On the Microsoft approach, we've always had different SKUs. It's the way it is. They've made it a little simpler over the years, and we used to justify it by saying, you know, Microsoft's customer base is more diverse than Apple's. There were more of them, and honestly, neither of those statements is really true anymore, and there's less and less of an excuse for that. So, yeah, I think they should have one on client, one on server, or whatever, but, you know, Microsoft would take baby steps here.
Now, of course, as you mentioned, there is something going on. They're sort of unifying the teams, which to a certain extent is PR. They're also providing a unified platform. So for developers, it's more it's easier to go from one version to the other and so on. But for operating system like the version of Windows, I guess you could call it, for the Xbox and the one that's going to work on their unnamed Internet of Things platform, these are completely different, right? I mean, these are not even, they're barely even Windows, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, they are different. And currently, of course, they're very different. The Windows for the Internet of Things is out in a very basic pre-release version. It's not representative of what will happen. And so today, that looks very strange to us today in the 21st century. It looks like something we would have seen in the 1990s. But I think that evolves. You know, the way that they approach development on these platforms today and in the future is much like this general statement, where it's a little bit of marketing, a little bit of reality. Yes, you can create something that they call a universal app that will run on phone, that will run on a tablet, that will run on a PC. But you're actually not creating a single app. You're creating a solution in Visual Studio that actually has two or three different apps. And when they add Xbox One to that mix in the future, if they add Windows for the Internet of Things to that in the future, you'll still have separate projects in there for each of the different apps, different platforms, and you will, in fact, be creating separate, discrete apps. They'll have some overlap with code, but it will never be, they'll never be that, well, I don't want to say never, but in this generation, at least, there is not a single app that you can create that will, in fact, run on all three platforms today or all four or five or whatever it is in the future. So even that's a little bit of marketing subterfuge, if you will.
Paul Thurrott writes for the Win Supersite. That's winsupersite.com, and you can find him on Twitter at Thurrott, and also on today's Windows Weekly show at 11 a.m. Pacific, right after this show. Thank you so much, Paul Thurrott, for coming on Tech News Today.
Right. See you soon.
All right. Well, drones get a lot of bad press these days, Elise Hugh, but sometimes they can benefit mankind.
That's right. A drone might have saved a life in Wisconsin or near the Madison, Wisconsin area. A huge relief for his family after an 82-year-old man, Wisconsin man, went missing for 3 days last week. Police used dogs. They used heat sensing devices, family and first responders combed the area. But in the end, it was the daughter, the man's daughter's boyfriend, who used a drone and found this 82-year-old man in 20 minutes. So speaks to the potential for drones in search and rescue. Of course, the FAA has been grounding them for those very purposes throughout the year.
Yeah. And of course, in the future, when Amazon is using drones for delivering packages, somebody who gets lost in the forest could actually order a little helicopter or something like that to fly them out or something. no, but I mean, you know, the reality is that the FAA is super down on drone usage. A lot of companies that want to show their future concepts for drones or for the usage of drones for a variety of purposes have to leave the country just to film the video. Because it's so illegal here in the United States. And, of course, there are dangers associated with drone use, power lines, you know, shredded pets, you name it. There are all kinds of horrible things that could happen, and they're easy to imagine. But it's also I also think that this story is kind of important because we have to remember that lives can be saved with drones. There are huge benefits and huge cost savings. If you think about just aerial photography, how much safer is it in a crisis or in an emergency or even like when there's a concert or something like that? How much safer is it to just fly a little drone up into the air instead of flying an airplane in a crowded airspace or putting up a hot air balloon or something like that? I think we have to weigh the costs versus the benefits.
That's precisely what the FAA says it's doing. The problem is it's taken a really long time, and they're saying that they're not even going to release a draft of what their drone regulations are going to be until towards the end of this year. And as you know better than many of us, Mike, I mean, amateur drones have been around for years now, and the FAA is just getting around to releasing a draft of how they're going to enforce their sort of flight regulations on these. And so a lot of these experiments and the journalism and the filmmaking and the realtors using it, farmers using it, using drones, has all been happening while the FAA is just trying to play whack-a-mole in regulating what's happening.
Yeah, it's an interesting space, and I'm not really clear myself where a sort of model airplane stops and a drone begins. Like, what makes it a drone? The fact that it has a camera, the fact that it's got some sort of self-flying electronics to a certain extent. I mean, some of the consumer drones, if you let go of the controls, they just hover in the midair, which is like really cool. Does that make it a drone? I'm not really sure why drones are suddenly such a much bigger deal than, hobbyist model aircraft used to be. We seem to have been flying these things at parks and around various places for decades. And it all kind of worked out okay. I hope that we get a lot more clarity and a lot more freedom to fly drones, because they're just, let's face it, they're really cool. And I want one. So that I guess is the bottom
line. A lot of important points there, Mike. Yep.
Well, a company called Alohar Mobile launched a product called Place Us for iOS. And the app uses phone sensors to enable families and friends to track each other, among other things. The app uses what the company calls artificial intelligence to figure out context from each phone's GPS, network ID, accelerometer, compass, and camera. It tries to figure out not only where you are, but what you're doing. This is another case, Elise Hugh, where people are going to be flipping out over the privacy implications of using and turning on all the sensors in a phone and then having people track each other. Where does the data go? Do they share it with anyone? Is this invasive? Will it be abused by people? But still, the technology is actually pretty cool, and this is right in line with how lots of companies are using artificial intelligence with sensor data and other contextual information to basically guess or figure out what the actual behavior of people is. Let me give you one example. This app, when it sees that you're at Whole Foods Market and it sees that you're moving slow like this in this pattern, it says, oh, you got a shopping cart and you are shopping right now. So the takeaway from that for the app is that is the behavior that you are actually shopping for groceries at this moment, not that just you're on the Whole Foods property. This is pretty cool. But, is this something that you and your family would use, Elise? I mean, it's going to be controversial, clearly, but I think it's kind of cool.
I guess I would take things separately. On one hand, the technology is very cool, and contextual awareness is only going to get better and better. So if this does freak you out, and there are lots of privacy implications, and we will be having those conversations, I would encourage that that we, all of us who are users and appreciators of technology, become, promote literacy, right? That people don't seem to get it. And so the first reaction is going to be to freak out. And there are limits to these things that we would like to see, of course, especially with company intrusion and the companies that sort of hold all of this information about our lives. And so I think literacy is a really important wave that we're going to really have to advocate over the next over the coming advancements of contextual awareness.
Yeah, and I think companies are going to have to work harder too to figure out ways to demonstrate or prove to the public that they don't share data. It's one thing to say that they don't, but there's so much data sharing going on that I think companies would really be well advised to figure out how to prove it, to demonstrate it, to be audited independently, and then to communicate that fact very clearly so that people have trust in some of these technologies and we can take advantage of some of what's possible without fearing that our private information is being abused. Now, just let me give you one other example of how this is used. Now, of course, PlaceMe, it comes in addition to another app called, Place Us comes from, replaces another app called PlaceMe. PlaceMe was for an individual. This one's for group sort of families and friends. My guess is that they're probably going to discontinue the PlaceMe one because the Place Us app does all of the same things and more. For example, it will notice patterns in your behavior. It'll notice that you go to the gym every Tuesday and Thursday. And then if you suddenly stop, it'll say, hey, you stopped going to the gym. Maybe you should go back, Tubby, or whatever it is, however it is that motivates you. That sort of thing is pretty cool to have sort of an artificial intelligence guide or assistant that looks out for you and notices things about your life and infers from that intelligent advice or information. So that sort of thing is very valuable. Of course, that's the kind of thing that Google and Apple want to do with Google Now and Siri. And here's a third-party alternative that does some things that those other two virtual assistants don't do. So I'm all for it. I'm going to try it as soon as I get my hands on an iPhone. This is iOS only. They're working on an Android version, but this is in the iTunes App Store today. So you can check that out immediately. We told you yesterday that New York City was floating a plan to offer free Wi-Fi installed in public phone booths. Well, TNT fan Andrew R. in Montreal points out that Wi-Fi-enabled phone booths have existed in London for quite some time, and he even sent us a picture. Do we have that picture, Jason? Yeah, here's a picture that he sent. Very lovely. A nice English phone booth that says Wi-Fi
here. Very cool.
Yeah.
Although, look at how stylish it is, too.
Yeah, it's way more stylish than the New York City ones, which tend to have just like a little tiny bit of aluminum covering the phone, and that's it. You're still standing out there on the street instead of having your own private closet. So, very cool.
That's great.
Well, in other news, a Tumblr blog called Apple Campus 2 exists for posting drone pictures of Apple's spaceship campus currently under construction. According to the Silicon Valley Business Journal, the individual components of the campus are being permitted separately. For example, the permit to lay the concrete foundation for the main round $250 million building was issued on May 13th, while the permit for the site's underground bunker-like theater where future Apple products will be announced has not yet been issued. But if you're watching the video, we're looking at some of these drone photos. This is really coming together. We already see the circular shape. We see some of the roads being gouged into the earth there. And this is an exciting project, I think. This is going to be quite a building, quite a campus overall. And it's nice that somebody is out there illegally flying drones and taking
That's
pictures.
That's what I was going
to
ask.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that drone, does that drone have a permit to fly?
I doubt it very much. And if it did have a permit from the city of Cupertino, you can bet that Tim Cook himself would be down at City Hall saying, why don't we pull that permit? You know, we bring billions of dollars in tax revenues into the city of Cupertino. We're pretty much your only major business. So anyway, it's pretty cool. There's like underground freeways and everything. This is going to be such a cool project. I can't wait till this exists. They probably won't let me on the premises, but I'm sure they'll let somebody who can take pictures check it out. Anyway, well, that is the tech news today. Thank you so much, Elise Hugh. What have you been working on these days, by the way?
Well, I'm really excited about the future of retail, Mike. We were talking about this a little earlier. I'm going to go to New York tomorrow and investigate sort of pop-up stores and what's happening with that in light of the rise of e-commerce. So that's coming up.
All right. And we'll look for that on NPR.org. And I'm looking forward to hearing about that. Thank you so much for being on as our co-anchor today.
Thanks, Mike.
Well, today, Facebook, Qualcomm, and AT&T report their earnings. So look for that information. And also, don't forget to subscribe to Tech News Today. You can subscribe on Stitcher, iTunes, YouTube, Feedly, Yahoo, RSS. So many options. You can choose your favorite at twit.tv/TNT. Please follow us on Twitter, Tech News Today TV, and send us your thoughts and opinions. Just send email to tnt@twit.tv or leave voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. Please don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight right here on the Twit Network. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.